It is Thursday, October 31st. Happy Halloween from Menace to Sports here in studio. No days off. Hashtag no days off.
It's spooky season.
It is spooky season. It's not a loner show today. Nowadays, it's hard to get people to come into work.
Huh? Okay. Yeah, decided to show up today.
Yeah, but just quick update. One thing is our tailgate that we announced, Penn State game on Lane Avenue. I mean, right at the corner of Lane Avenue and whatever that Woody Hayes Drive, right by the, I mean, 20 feet from the Blackwell, 4 or 5 minute walk to stadium. It's a covered lot, heaters, TVs, food, drinks, entertainment, music, games, a raffle. I'm going to raffle off a couple things that I have. It's going to be awesome. It's going to be crazy. It's going to set the barometer, set the bar for tailgates down on campus for sure. So you want to check that out. Tickets are on sale on our website, and obviously Patreon members, subscribers get a discount and first dibs. So make sure you check that out. Check out our Patreon. You can find the link anywhere. I'm not going to bore us with the link. But the other thing that's happening next week is we're going to completely revamp our Patreon. We've been trying to give as much as we can to our subscribers, trying to give some video stuff. But next week, we're revamping the entire thing. We're going to really detail out each tier and what all you're going to get and start delivering on some of these video content stuff and some of the stuff that we've been wanting to do. Next week's the week that we're going to launch it and at least detail it out. So make sure you check that out. And really excited about it. Got a good show for you today. Some interesting things to talk about in today's Menace to Society, episode 41. So let's get to the show.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in the media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
ass. All right, welcome to Menace to Society, episode 41 in our million listener week. We should hit it by Friday or Saturday, and I still don't know what we're going to give away or what we're going to do. But we got a couple days. I'll figure it out. We'll probably announce it on our Menace to the Midwest show coming out Friday. And it'll be all over social media, but we're going to, here's all I know. We're going to give something away to someone and it's probably going to go to Patreon subscribers. So subscribe and I'll let you know what that is, but we're fired up for it. Appreciate the support. Appreciate you tuning in. I want to start this episode off with a very, very important thing with, and it was mentioned in the Menace Society show put out yesterday with the new compensation for image and likeness, blah, blah, blah. The NCAA football from EA Sports should be coming back at some point, and people are losing their shit about it. So yeah. The question is, what all needs to be incorporated in this game? It's been so long. What, 2014 was the last one?
Right? I don't even remember.
Yeah, I believe it was 2014 was the last one that I bought, at least.
In the last 5 years without this game, what has changed and what needs to be implemented in this game? And I will start off. We talked about this already. The recruiting aspect of this game needs to be ridiculous.
It needs to be completely revamped and just,
I mean,
enhanced.
When you think about it, because for me, playing that game was, I mean, we all three of us grew up playing that game, and we had, you know, family dynasties, everything, you know, where you had players. The dynasty function is going to be the best part of the game, and the recruiting needs to be bigger than ever. Like, yeah, that needs to be the main aspect.
And not only that, for it to be actually a relevant and accurate game, the transfer portal has to be huge.
They have to put the transfer portal.
They got to have repercussions for when you leave Bowling Green to take the Northwestern job, or you leave to take the Ohio State job. And I mean, commits need to decommit. They need to have decommitments for sure in recruiting, right?
Oh yeah, and they got to play something with the early signing day and then the regular signing period. You got to have all that,
and you got to have the commit videos, right?
The Twitter videos for when the number one guy commits.
So if they're going to do it right, they need to have a couple things. They need to have like one of these 247 Sports or Rivals or Bleach Report. They need to have a contract with one of those, whoever outbids the other ones. Yeah. And it's like the 247 recruiting segment of the game. Mm-hmm. And then that's where you have videos like, or Bleacher Report commitment videos or whatever it is.
Yeah.
They need to really... I mean, and you know they will.
Yeah.
But
the other thing they need to have is, I think the road to the Heisman or whatever they're going to call it, road to glory, where you create your own guy, you start in high school, and they need to have that really done up so that you get to do that, you know, recruiting process.
The recruiting process.
Where you get to go through and you get to meet with different coaches and, have Saban sit down with you and talk to you.
And kind of similar to how that Madden came out, and they have that the same thing where you play like two games or one game in college or whatever it is. I don't even know my son plays. I haven't played it, but... it'll be interesting. I'm excited for it to come back. It certainly is all the buzz. It's the bee sneeze right now.
we should do a Menace to Society like dynasty.
Yeah, have a little contest people can get in.
Not put the horse before the cart. They got to announce that the game's coming out.
It's coming back.
it might be the best selling video game of all time if they bring it back.
Oh, it certainly will be. Oh, but it's exciting time. Exciting time now that players can get paid for their likeness. Here's the other thing that I didn't talk about on the show yesterday. And that is the repercussions of this NCAA ruling, right? And what's to come. Everyone wants to talk about how it's going to happen, what's going to happen. And I saw Brady Quinn made a comment is, do you know the lawsuits that they're going to face now from players that played in the past that didn't get compensated? There's going to be a major class action lawsuit that these players want to get compensated for their likeness. And it happened to coaches years ago, back when they could have like basically part-time coaches. They were like, I forget what they were called, but they got paid like half a salary, no benefits. And after a while, they were like, they're working full-time. That's not fair. Mm-hmm. So there was a huge class action lawsuit. And I remember I worked with a coach or two that coached back in that time, and they got a nice check, like a $15,000, $20,000 check, something, nothing crazy, but I mean, they got paid, and these athletes are going to get paid.
Well, the good thing about that is that the schools have the money to pay.
No, absolutely.
Well, and that's what there was a class action lawsuit not too long ago that a friend of mine who played at I think it was UNLV or something, he got a check for like $3,000-$4,000 from a school for whatever the reason that there was already a class action lawsuit by players against universities. The other thing is there's already been that kind of lawsuit against Ohio State University. Yep. Chris Spielman and a couple other players tried to sue IMG and Ohio State because they continue to use their likeness after they leave Ohio State and they don't reimburse them for it, which is part of what the contract has been as a player is they own your likeness. If it's in Ohio State's uniform, they own it.
Yeah, well, Chris Spielman won. They took his picture down.
Yeah.
He did. He said, don't put me up in the stadium. That's me. You're benefiting off of me.
Yeah.
Take it down. And they did. They took it down.
Exactly.
But how about this? So we are into the final month of college football. Mm. And there was this tweet from Zach Barnett. It's phenomenal. Into the final month of the college football regular season, each of these scenarios is 100% still possible. Number one, the ACC Coastal can end in a 7-way tie at 4-4.
How is that one? That's
the worst. Insane. The worst. Can you imagine the worst division in college football? They could end the season in a 7-way tie at 4-4.
You know what? That's fitting. Yeah, that needs to happen.
It would be awesome.
What's the tiebreaker? Like points scored or something?
I'd have to really look.
You know what
into
they do? They cancel the championship game, give it to Clemson, and move on.
Honestly, probably the best idea. Probably what happens is Clemson goes and plays a spring game against themselves, just to watch some football.
And it's more entertaining than the game would have been anyways.
Right. You're not gonna believe these other three. Here's three things that could also still happen. One is Tennessee can win the SEC East. Tennessee can. Can you imagine?
Oh, what, because they beat South Carolina or something like that? I mean, that opened it up, obviously.
Yeah, it opens it up, and if they could win out, they could win the SEC East. How about this one for the Buckeye fans? Illinois can win the Big Ten West.
That'd be great.
I mean, it'd be a nice skate in the park for Ohio State to get through that game. And here's the one that really blew my mind. UCLA can still win the Pac-12 South.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
Control their own destiny. Oof. How about that? Isn't that crazy?
That is wild.
So I wanted to have a little analytics segment, and here's my deal. I love analytics, and as we break these games down and talk about football, like I always provide you with great analytics, but then I always want to explain, like, why does that matter? What does that mean? How does that apply? Because I've seen some people that all they care about is analytics, and some Sports Source Analytics has put out some awesome ones, and it's like, okay, I can just throw numbers at you, but I'm not interested in a math equation. Tell me, why does that matter, right? Like, how does that apply? And some of these formulas are so outrageous. You're like, I don't even know what that means. Like, let's just turn on the film and see how good they are. My God. But so here's how about this for you? This is really cool. There's only five defenses in the FBS in college football in 2019 that are allowing their opponents to score touchdowns less than 10% of possessions. That's pretty self-explanatory, yeah, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. That means less than 10% of the time, these teams will score a touchdown. And those five teams, number one in the country is Ohio State. 6% of possessions result in a touchdown. So here's the next one. It didn't catch me that off guard, but Georgia is mm-hmm. number two. Okay. It's 7% of possessions. Then Penn State is number three at 9%. Iowa is 4% at 9%. And Clemson is 5% at 9%. I guess all tied for third. So you're looking at three Big Ten defenses, one SEC defense, and one ACC defense. And I was surprised. I didn't look it up. I'm going to have to look up the percentage of LSU and Alabama because those are thought of as probably the best defenses in the SEC. But Georgia has a solid defense that is not allowing people to score touchdowns.
Well, I don't know if LSU would be considered.
I know LSU's given up some points. Well,
yeah, they've given up some points, but they're considered, I guess, they have a solid defense. I mean, they mm-hmm. have a solid secondary. They have a decent rush defense. And they're considered, I mean, they've played probably the hardest schedule out of the SEC thus far.
Yeah, and that might be why they're not in that conversation, because they've played a much tougher level of opponent than a lot of teams.
Absolutely. But. And here's another thing that is not talked about often that also is from Sports Source Analytics is hidden yardage. And here's what hidden yardage is. That's basically like where does your starting field position based mm-hmm. on against the national average? Like if you start on the 35, but most people start on the 25, that's 10 yards of hidden yardage, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. That means that, and so the number one team in the country right now in hidden yardage is Penn State. They have 1,050 hidden yards. Hmm. And the point made up by Sports Source Analytics is that's a hidden All-American player. Yeah, right. It really is.
Like, seriously. Yeah.
I mean, that's an All-American running back through eight games that has almost 1,100 yards.
Yeah.
And it's just hidden because it's like, no, that's just where we start normally.
Yeah.
It's crazy, isn't it?
That's interesting because there's so many different contributing factors to that. Could be the defense causes a lot of turnovers, great punt return, different things.
Mm-hmm. It's a number of different reasons, but ultimately that's yardage that you didn't have to gain.
Yeah.
And so I want to do a decent study, especially maybe on the Midwest show, because it's a bye week for Ohio State, kind of a down week for the region. So that'd be a great study to do, is the hidden yardage study and some of these analytics that I think are awesome. It's also my favorite argument, and we've talked about it 100 times, is what they haven't played anyone, right? Who have they played? And so the only way you can truly evaluate, you can't say that about anyone. Like, who has Minnesota played? I don't know. I mean, not anyone that good. But the best way going through it all, and I saw this tweet was, the opponent's records of the seven unbeatens, right? Mm-hmm. That's the only way you can really say it. Like, because you look at teams like Oklahoma loses to Kansas State, Georgia loses to South Carolina. You could lose to any decent team, obviously. So to say, oh, mm-hmm. Cincinnati's not a great team. Yes, they're better than probably South Carolina. So let's relax with that. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All you can look at is how well have your opponents done? Ohio State is number one in the country. Their opponents have won 58% of games. LSU is number two in the country at 53% of the games. Penn State is number three, 52% of the games. Clemson actually is number four. Their opponents are 500 right now. Then Minnesota, Baylor, Alabama's opponents are 25-39 for a 0.391 win percentage. So haven't played anyone. Alabama has played the least of ones, right? The best way you could put it.
That's just horrendous.
And that's why people, I think, have started to bring up Alabama's ranking being as high as it is. Like, they haven't been extremely dominant against not anybody that they've played. I mean, at the same time, you can make that argument for however many teams. Everybody thinks nobody else plays anybody.
So here's the question off the heels of that, right? Because Alabama has a huge matchup in 2 weeks against LSU. Mm-hmm. Obviously, their quarterback is out. Tua's hurt, had ankle surgery. Here's the question. Should Nick Saban play Tua if he's, let's say, 90% healthy? Should he play him against LSU? Or should he sit Tua, let him get healthier? I guess still have a chance at winning, but you're going to anticipate a loss against LSU. And then let the storyline put you in the playoff. Win the rest of your games. LSU goes to the SEC championship game. Doesn't matter what they do. Probably be better if they won. And then the storyline reads this. Alabama loses one game to the number one team in the country without their starting quarterback, Heisman candidate, Tua Tagovailoa.
That's definitely what you... Yeah, sit him. I mean, why wouldn't you...
This is really a conversation of competitive nature versus calculated strategy, right?
Well, I mean, if you lose that game and you still think that the AP, whoever they are, those the committee will have you in the playoff, then why wouldn't you just not play your guy?
Well, and ultimately,
and then you don't have to play against probably Florida in the SEC championship. You just Florida save or Georgia. Week.
Yeah, that's the argument, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, do you want the competitive nature of winning every game and proving that you're the best team, or do you take the calculated risk and say, you know what, we could still win with Mac Jones. We could still go beat LSU possibly, but if we don't, we've got the storyline.
Yeah.
It's Alabama. We already have the leg up because everyone loves Alabama.
It's Alabama.
And then you take a loss to the number one team in the country. You didn't have your quarterback and skate your way into the playoff.
I hate to even think about this question because it's so against my nature and what I want for college football. Like that takes away. And that's why people don't want the playoff to expand. Is now you're talking about taking the regular season and diminishing it. Mm-hmm. Like now this game doesn't mean as much because they can sit their starting quarterback, lose a game, still get in and win the national title. That's the exact reason why the playoff was argued against. And it's exactly what's going to happen. The more you expand the playoff, the more these conversations are going to happen.
But does the best team in the country still win it all at the end?
I don't know.
Yeah, you would have they to say do, so, right?
If Alabama goes to win the national title with Tua after doing that, if they did do it, the best team won. What's it matter?
They're going to have to play the best team.
Right. It's going to happen eventually. So I can see both sides. But here's the next question I have for you. This is the absolute oh shit moment for all the Heather Dinniches of the world. What happens if Alabama beats LSU? Let's say Tua plays, doesn't play, doesn't matter. They beat LSU. They beat then Auburn upsets Alabama in the Iron Bowl. And then the heads of the entire committee explode. Does a one loss? Here's a question: does a one loss Oregon team get in?
With their,
lost in week one.
You would have to
the Auburn team that beat Bama.
Yeah.
Yikes.
It would be tough to keep them out. I mean, you're talking about assuming that this Pac-12 champ. That's important. Pac-12 champ. And keeping them out after the team they lost to just went and beat the number one team in the nation after beating LSU would be Alabama. That's a scary situation for a lot of people.
They'd have to beat Utah out there.
I would give so much money for that to happen. Like I just want pure chaos in the SEC.
Can we get Auburn wins the football game 2.0?
That'd be great.
That'd be awesome. That would be awesome. Well, before we, I want to really talk about this Florida Georgia game, and then we have Ryan Bartow coming in to do an interview later, just to talk about recruiting, the insider accounts of recruiting. If you don't know Ryan Bartow, he was a good friend of mine when I was coaching. He was one of three people that I really leaned on to talk to find out real information. He's one of the good guys that really gets the dirt and the info and can tell you what's really going on. And he has an interesting point about the USC job and why they're really going to try to get Urban Meyer. Now, I'm not going to say they're really going to get him. I know I made that prediction a long time ago, but they are putting some pieces in place to go after Urban Meyer. And he's going to give us an insider account into the West Coast, USC, and also just recruiting in general. He used to be in South Florida for years. That's when I got to know him. So we'll get to the Florida-Georgia game and Ryan Bartow right after a message from one of our sponsors. Do you ever find yourself wishing that you could make some extra cash with your NFL knowledge? At MyBookie, they want to make your dream come true this season. Right now, all players are invited to play in the free $50,000 Survivor Contest. Winner takes all. Contest starts October 8th and closes October 14th before the start of Monday Night Football. Pick one team each week, survive the longest, and you can take home $50,000 in cash. Make a successful deposit with MyBookie and you'll receive a free entry into the contest today. Between football season, the Major League Baseball playoffs, and the start of NBA and NHL seasons, it's time to get off the sideline and get into action. If you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little to win a lot, try a parlay. For instance, if you like a couple of the big favorites this week, parlays are perfect because they let you bet multiple games together for a much bigger payout. So if you're going to bet this season, do the smart thing and go to mybookie.ag because no one gives you more ways to win. If you really want to support your team this season, don't just sit on the sidelines. Get in the game with MyBookie. And if you join right now, MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code MENACE, M-E-N-A-C-E, to activate the offer. That's promo code MENACE to double your cash. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, and you get paid. All right. Well, the game of the week is I mean, clearly the only top 10 matchup in the country, and that's the world's largest outdoor cocktail party.
Yep.
The old Florida, Georgia. And for those of you that don't know about this game, it is an awesome atmosphere. I was a part of it, I think, five times, and it is really cool. I mean, it's in Jacksonville, so it's a neutral site in the Jaguars Stadium, and it is legitimately, I mean, you're talking about, I remember we used to take the bus from the team hotel, and you go over this big bridge to go into the stadium area, and the whole, I mean, there's a million people outside, and it's just Florida tents, Georgia tents. It's just, then you get in the stadium split right in half.
Right down
the middle, and it's all orange and blue on one side, all red and black on the other side, and it is like, it's one of the coolest things I've ever seen. And it certainly, with these kind of implications, is unbelievable.
Well, and it hasn't been these kind of implications since pretty much Urban left Florida. And
yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable back in the day of like 2007. That was the No-Shawn Marino.
Yeah, they, Brandon
when,
Spikes.
When they scored, well, in 2007, they scored a touchdown. Oh, the whole team stormed the field.
Ran on, danced on you.
And then the next year, we just absolutely obliterated them. Urban's calling timeouts.
I saw that interview recently Urban did with ESPN about that. That was pretty funny.
Yeah, it was awesome. I'll never forget it. It was really cool. And so it's an awesome rivalry, awesome game, awesome venue. If you ever have a chance to go see it, it's easily in the top 10 game day, I guess, atmospheres and experiences you could ever have. I guess, although I've never had that experience at a fan level.
Yeah, actually, I was talking to my wife about it, and I think we're planning to go down next year for it.
That'd be awesome.
She has family in Jacksonville. It's going to be great.
Yeah, well, if it's anything like this year, the implications are high. I mean, this is the road through the SEC to the SEC championship game right here. Yeah. I mean, outside of some bizarre thing, like we said, Tennessee could potentially still win it. But, I mean, the reality is, winner of this game is probably going to Atlanta to play the winner of Bama LSU, and that's just the reality of it. And the cool thing is both teams now have a loss in the conference, so this will absolutely decide it. I mean, when Florida lost to LSU and then Georgia lost to South Carolina, it's like, okay, now we're really matched up again.
Yeah, back to even.
Yeah, and so I really looked at the analytics. I've watched both teams several times, and I think this game is really a game about defensive football.
Yeah.
I think it's also a game with lackluster playmakers on the perimeter. I really like Freddie Swain at Florida. Don't get me wrong. Lawrence Cager looks like he's going to come back at Georgia. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think this comes down to whose offense can actually put up some points. Mm-hmm. And Georgia has the X factor in DeAndre Swift.
Yep, exactly.
I mean, I like P. Ryan. I like Florida's team. I think Fromm's a better quarterback than Kyle Trask. I think when you just look at the matchup, well, and
he hasn't really put up the numbers.
Well, no, but
he's
I'm
a more
that,
experienced but, quarterback and, at the I'm very least.
You and you watch him play; he's a better quarterback than Kyle Trask.
I agree.
But I just looking at the analytics on our Menace analytics. When Florida's on offense, Georgia has a 23 spot advantage overall, and then a 27 spot advantage on critical downs. So it's a much closer matchup when Georgia's on offense and Florida's on defense. It's damn near even. So I think that's where the difference in the game is. It lies when Florida's on offense and Georgia's on defense. And I mean, if Georgia opened a 6.5 points favorite, Pro Football Focus has them covering. So I think it's going to be here's what it is. It is really tough to score points on this Georgia defense. They're the fifth best scoring defense in America. Plus, they're the number one red zone defense in America. They don't allow touchdowns when you get down there, and that's part of the reason why they're so high in scoring defense. And Florida just hasn't scored points very well. I mean, they're 45th in the country scoring points, and this is by far their greatest test outside of LSU, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Their other problem I see is Florida cannot run the football, and Georgia has a stout run defense, and I think that's the issue here. And here's what Dan Mullen is known for, always has been when we were at Florida with Tim Tebow, even Mississippi State with Dak Prescott, and now at Florida with, I guess, what would be his second-string quarterback and with a mixture of some Emory Jones. Yeah. He's always been known to have a great plan and scheme to throw the ball with high efficiency. The schemes are built around quarterback success. He's a very brilliant coach. He's a quarterback guru. And so that's what it's all built around. And I think this will be the ultimate test because Georgia is the ninth best defense at pass, I guess, defending pass efficiency.
Yeah.
They make people throw inefficient throws. And Florida is a top 20 offense throwing the ball. So this is the matchup that I think requires the most attention. Can Kyle Trask throw the ball against this defense? Because I don't think he's going to be able to run the ball. That Florida's going to have a great day running the football. And can he throw the ball? And who's he throwing to? Like I said, Freddie Swain, That's their big playmaker, right? Then you have C.J. Hammond. Then you have Van Jefferson. Their tight end, Kyle Pitts, is their leading receiver, and that's scary. I'm telling you that in Dan Mullen's offense, when your leading receiver is a tight end, that tells me you don't have any big-time playmakers at receiver, because that's not how his offense is ever built. He had Chad Bumpus at Mississippi State. He had Percy Harvin at Florida. I mean, you look at every stop, he's had a big-time playmaker on the perimeter that makes huge plays, and he feeds them. And right now, that's their tight end, and that's scary. That's scary because I don't think they have the offensive skill to throw the ball against this secondary, to be honest with you. You flip the other side of the ball, and now it's much more evenly matched, because Florida has a very, very, very good defense. Mm-hmm. And then Georgia has a decent offense. It's damn near perfectly evenly matched. I think the real question is going to be, who the hell is Georgia throwing the ball to?
Yeah, that's what I was
That's always the question.
I mean, they have. I do like Lawrence Cager. I've said it before. He had a big game against Notre Dame, and he really, him coming back could provide a spark. Yeah, but exactly. Outside of that, I think it's really just average receivers. Neither team has a receiver in the top 15 in the SEC, grade wise or production wise. So you're looking at two quarterbacks that are gonna struggle finding a guy open. To be honest with you,
well, and I think correct me if I'm wrong, but Florida's strength on defense is their front seven. Their secondary is solid, but I think their front seven is really what is their strength.
Yeah, I mean, I think their defense as a whole is solid. I mean, they have probably the number two corner prospect in the country. I mean, they have a decent secondary too. The difference here when Georgia's on offense that no one else has had against Florida is DeAndre Swift. He's the nation's fifth best running. He leads the nation's fifth best rushing attack coming from Athens. And Florida hasn't been dynamic stopping the run. They're 44th in the country stopping the run. Hmm. They have a talent-laden secondary that should make Georgia somewhat one-dimensional, and then all focus can be on stopping the run.
Yeah.
So that's where I see this mismatch. I see Georgia being able to run the football on Florida and Florida not being able to run the football on Georgia. That's a problem, especially because, I guess, the quarterback battle, you're going to give that edge to Jake Fromm every time. I think one of the biggest stats of the game, and here's what I'm going to watch for, is when Florida's on defense, they're the eighth best defense in the country at getting after the quarterback. They've been phenomenal. And I mean, you saw it. There's a little skewed because they had like 4 million sacks against Miami in week one, but they have been getting after the quarterback at a high clip. And Georgia is the number one team in the country at protecting Jake Fromm. They've given up the least sacks in America. And this is where you're talking about their both of their keys to the game. Is Georgia has to keep Jake Fromm protected and clean and let him throw the ball. And then Florida's got to get after his ass. And if they can bottle up DeAndre Swift, he's going to make some plays. If they can bottle him up enough and get after Jake Fromm, Florida's got a chance. But I think getting down to predictions, I think Georgia wins this game. I don't think they cover. I think it's extremely close. I don't think it's a blowout, but I do think Georgia pulls it out because they can actually run the football and because they have a better quarterback. Defenses are somewhat of a wash to me. I think their playmakers on the perimeter are somewhat of a wash. I think it comes down to two people, DeAndre Swift, Jake Fromm. Better quarterback, better rushing attack, better running back. Georgia wins the game. Thoughts?
I don't know. I mean, I agree with everything you're saying, but I've been doubting this Florida team all year, and they just keep winning. So I'm going to say Florida pulls the upset.
Here's what I'm going to say. I don't think Georgia is as good as people think. And obviously, they've proven that. They lost to South Carolina, and they beat Notre Dame, who apparently is terrible. And so I'm going to go with this. I think Florida wins this game, and I think it's because of Dan Mullen's knowledge of the Florida-Georgia rivalry from being in it. I think that rivalry aspect is more than Kirby Smart knows. He's only been in it a couple times. And I think Emory Jones plays a big role in the run game and gets Florida's rushing attack going.
Well, Emory Jones has played well when he's in there, and they do have that 2-QB attack, but yep. I'm going to have to disagree. I think that you go with the better quarterback, better run game when the defenses are somewhat equal. So we'll find out, that's for sure. But I definitely want to switch modes here and get to Ryan Bartow. We're going to bring him in right now to do a phone interview. I'll get him on the clip, on the line, and we'll talk a little bit about the West Coast, about recruiting, kind of insider stories into the recruiting process, what it's like to get recruited, he's worked at Rivals, 247 Sports. So how does it work? The politics of stars, all of that. So we're going to get to that right now. All right, we got a special guest here in Menace to Sports Studio. Our very good friend, longtime friend, Ryan Bartow, who is, those of you that don't know him, he is a recruiting guru. And I use that term lightly because a lot of people write articles about secondhand information. This is the guy that gets the information that other people write articles about. He's the juice man. He has all the juice, all the info. He actually was also basically running the recruiting at Oregon with Mario Cristobal until recently taking a new job with Exos. So, Ryan, thanks for joining us.
Hey, glad to be here live from down here in Paradise Bay in lovely Long Beach, California, a couple blocks off the ocean, and couldn't be much happier.
The whole reason why I wanted to bring Ryan on is he, throughout all my years recruiting South Florida, always had all the juice. I mean, I've mentioned it on the show several times. I had like three guys that I actually talked to that were in the recruiting game that I felt like actually had insider knowledge and talked to kids and knew what the hell they were talking about, and Ryan was 1A. So I really want to get your perspective, Ryan, for our listeners on the recruiting process from that 247, that Exos Sports, from that other side, just as far as rankings, politics, my camps and all that, just because I think that, one, fans would love to hear the insider account of that. And then also, I think recruits and high school kids that listen to this might need to realize that they don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Right. And the unique perspective as well, and a lot goes into it. One way, you know, just to give some of your listeners my background, I grew up in Madison, Wisconsin, did college and newspapers there, got hired by a company called Rivals.com about 15 years ago. I worked 1 year in Chapel Hill and then broke so many stories in 1 week that I got hired in a place I'd never been before, Clemson, South Carolina. And I went there where they love getting a commit just as much as they love getting a touchdown. And it's a different lifestyle and a different culture in South Carolina. And I stayed there for 7 years. And then I got one of the best phone calls of my life. Hey, you want to move to Fort Lauderdale and work for this new company called 24/7, and we'll put you on TV and we'll send you all over the country. And so I was a national analyst for 5 years at 24/7 Sports. And then when I was down in South Florida, I met this guy named Mario Cristobal, this maniac recruiter, an old school Hurricane. And he's like, you know, I'm going to be a head coach again one day. And when I do, I'm going to call you and get your butt off Fort Lauderdale Beach and you're going to come with me. So that meant going diagonal across the country to Eugene, Oregon, and helping the Ducks get the top class in the pack 2 years in a row. And then had a great experience up there and got a similar great phone call in August from my man Jason Pugh at Exos Digital. They needed a West Coast analyst and got a chance to make double the money to live in Southern California, and they pay for your travel, and you can help kids out and help college coaches kind of lead them to water. And you know what? That's in my heart, and that's kind of where my skill set belongs, and that's where I come to today, living in beautiful Southern Cal and covering all the top kids in the West Coast hotspots.
That's awesome. Well, tell me this. Talk to me about the difference between South Florida and California, because they're two of probably the top three recruiting areas in America, just loaded with freaks everywhere. I mean, national schools recruit all three areas. Just talk to me about the difference that you see in South Florida and Southern California, and just kind of compare the two.
Right. And I call, you know, Fort Lauderdale Paradise A, and I'm living in Paradise B. And in California is the number one spot in the world for quarterbacks. When I went out through 34 high schools last month in 1 week in SoCal and saw all the best guys for 20, 21, 22, and 23, I saw a legitimate 7 Division I freshman quarterbacks. There's no place like it. Every powerhouse from modern day to Bosco to Mission Viejo has a Division I QB, and then they have a guy behind the guy who's 2 years behind him that will be a Division I Pac-12 type quarterback. Wow. And they mass produce them out here. They get trained at a young age. Obviously, the cost of living is a lot out here because, I mean, the last time I checked, sunshine and no humidity, that doesn't come free. Yeah. So you're getting these quarterbacks trained up at a young age. So they're seeing stuff both mentally and physically that they're not a lot of places. You know, Georgia's come a long way. So has Dallas, Texas, in terms of producing quarterbacks. But there's no place like that, like in Southern California. And so you have that element. You can get your good skill out here, receivers, running backs. The only thing you don't really get out on this side of the country at all, and I'm including Texas in this, defensive linemen. They just do not exist. You get a lot of Polynesian kids that are body types, a 6'1", 6'1 and a half, 280 pounds. They probably should be offensive guards. But due to a lack of that size and that body type, they're playing defensive tackle. And I think that's the difference in college football. In South Florida, you get more raw upside kids aren't lifting. They're not eating. They're competitive. They're the most competitive kids in the country. You get more upside, more skill, faster kids. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you don't see their best football until they're playing on Sundays. Mm-hmm. I mean, one of the great examples is you went to Miami Central and Dalvin Cook doesn't even start. They started Joe Yerby, but you knew, hey, this kid, based on his upside and his mentality and his speed, that's the guy. And he's going to not only be a guy in college, he's going to be a guy in the NFL. So I think South Florida mass produces the best skill talent in the country, always has, always probably will. You should, shame on you, if you ever need a wide receiver or a DB, you go from Palm Beach down to Broward to Dade, and there's 175 D1 kids every year.
Oh, every year.
So that dog mentality, too, because those kids know that's their way out, and that's something that you can't develop. That hunger on the inside that's going to really be the difference in a lot of competitive situations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I loved my time down there, and I loved recruiting those kids down there. Even going back to my days at smaller schools like Temple, when I recruited Robbie Anderson, who now still starts for the Jets. He's one of the better receivers. He's their best receiver, probably. And I mean, you can really find what you said, that dog mentality down there, and you can find a really good kid too, a quality kid that's going to come in and work hard. Because like you said, it's his way out. That's what he's trying to make it, and they are committed to doing that for sure. So kind of switching gears on you, not entirely, but talk to me about the recruiting ranking process at these places. I mean, you've worked for the two biggest rivals and then 247. Talk to me about the ranking process and how, you know, I've seen a number of kids nationally, maybe not in the South Floridas of the world, get kind of underrated because they're in Austin Mack comes to mind in Fort Wayne, Indiana. And it's just, talk to me about the political stuff that goes on when it comes to giving stars out and ranking kids.
Yes, and Austin Mack, as we both talked about when he was coming out, he stuck out like a sore thumb. I called him a rare Midwest skill. And I mean that in terms of there's certain parts of the country that mass produce certain positions. We only have a 60-year sample size of it to lean on. So where do you go for your run blockers, your Midwest tough, you know, offensive tackles? Well, those are mass produced in Ohio, New Jersey, to a lesser extent, Wisconsin. Where do you go for your quarterbacks? Where are they mass-produced? Southern California, Texas. Now Georgia's making a little run on that. Where do you go for your skill? South Florida. In a lot of these places, the better kids are in the southern parts of the state. Louisiana, California, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida. There's higher hit rate and more upside the further south you go in certain places. So for in terms of rankings, a lot of these companies, they're limited on staff. So certain places of the country, Boise, Idaho, or Colorado, or Iowa, that may have a gem every once in a while, those kids are probably not getting covered much. You try to see every kid in person, and you try to gauge their development and always watch their senior film. And you gather as much stuff as you can. And I really like the model that 24/7 has, because they're doing it in terms of an NFL draft board.
Right.
How are these kids going to be 4 or 5 years down the road? It doesn't matter what they are now. It's a developmental sport. How are they projecting down the road? And that means you're going to see a lot more quarterbacks, left tackles, and pass rushers are going to be your five stars. And a lot of people don't realize, they get so excited about the stars, but there's only 32 five-stars a year. It's right. Very rare to be a five-star. And there's 250-plus four-stars. And then there's thousands of three-stars. Well, the odds are that, you know, a lot of those three-stars are going to make up the majority of the NFL.
Yeah, absolutely.
But when you go back in the last 5, 6 years, a lot of these five-stars have become elite guys and wind up as first, second, third-round picks.
There's no doubt about that. And it's really funny because people really put so much weight into that. And you look at the NFL draft, like you said, I mean, every year there's three stars and especially four stars getting picked in the top 10 of the picks. And I mean, it's just a starting point. And it obviously no one can project your development over 4 years and your production. And I mean, you look at guys like Khalil Mack, JJ Watt, some guys like that, where people get missed. And so it's not the end all be all, but it's certainly a barometer of where a kid is at nationally at that point, you know?
Yeah, and to give some love to my old company at 24/7, the guy that gets the final say on it is Barton Simmons, and I think he has one of the great eyes for talent. He played at Yale, so he's been there. He knows it. Charles Power, I think, does a great job in terms of their evals. So they get a lot of feedback both on-site and around the country of guys that go and see these guys and engage their upside. And this year alone, for dual-threat QBs, all their top guys have started as freshmen, and they're some of the best QBs in the country. You know what? They must be doing something right. I know they have for years.
Yeah, for sure. Well, now talk to me about your going to your back to your time at Oregon that you just mentioned. Talk to me about the process specifically with Mario and his staff and how offers go out, how kids get evaluated. I know at Ohio State, Mark Pantone ran the show, and it was he gave you lists and rankings and his rankings, and you had the final say as the position coach, but he gave you everything in the world. He gave you the starting point and kind of his list, and then it became dialogue on who's better than who because he had a strong opinion and evaluated everyone. So how did it work with you and Oregon?
Yeah, well, it's a little different because in that situation, your best recruiter by far, and I think he's the best recruiter in the world, is the head coach. Nobody spends more time recruiting than Mario Cristobal. He has a passion for it. He's got a big heart for it. And, I mean, literally every morning you have this list that goes out on the Brotherhood, and every assistant coach is responsible for texting 20 kids every morning before 9 o'clock or 20 parents or 20 juniors. And then you're going to be FaceTiming after your staff meeting for at least an hour, hour and a half, all the decision makers, all the kids. Well, having been through a lot of the other schools in the pack, they're doing maybe a tenth of that, not even. And the results were the top class in the pack for the first time in that program's history, 2 years in a row. In terms of the offering process, a lot of times, it normally places will go from the personnel department or the assistant coach. In my situation, I was the guy that found a lot of the guys, just given my background of going for a place that I covered the whole country at 24/7, so I knew the pockets of the country that produced certain positions. And so I would find a lot of the guys, and then you would get them to that position coach, and then it made its way up to the coordinator. But a lot of times in that situation, if they were too slow, you couldn't get a defensive line guy offered, and you knew he was good, you would just bring him straight to the head coach, and he could figure it out. It's not rocket science, and they would be offered. And that's why a place like Oregon, some people are like, hey, they have 250 offers, though. Well, you better have a big web like that. Because you're in Eugene, Oregon, that state produces maybe one kid a year that you should offer. If you're in on a guy that's 4 hours within campus, you're probably not on the right guys.
Yeah, that's a
so
fact.
You have an appeal and a national brand to your advantage, so you have to go elsewhere to get most of your roster, and that's what they've done, and that's what's going to lead them to future success.
All right, well, now talking more about the recruiting process, and without naming names, or you're free to, you know me, I don't give a shit, but tell me the wildest thing you heard of, saw, or knew went on in the recruiting process with a school, maybe illegal or dirty or whatever.
Similar to Major League Baseball, where there's probably only 6 or 7 teams that, you know, given those payrolls, really have a legit shot to make the Final Four, and you can probably figure out which ones.
Right.
And they probably have the top 6 or 7 recruiting classes every year. And But I like the stories that are good, fun stories even more. So I'll give you one example. So
yeah, Penei give me one.
Penei Sewell is the best left tackle in the country. He's going to be the second pick in the draft after Trevor Lawrence in 2 years. This guy's a monster. He's 6'6", 350, to run a sub-5 flat. And he's just a dude. And so Mario gets named the head coach, and he's all about offensive tackle recruiting. He's personally recruiting this guy. And Penei decides, hey, I'm not going to sign early December 20th. I'm going to go the distance. And, well, Oregon's already used their official visit. That means that kid has still got to go to USC and to Alabama. So your odds of getting him are pretty low. So, and Mario's already used his in-home visit, so he's like, I have to be creative. How am I going to still get a shot to get this guy. So you're 1 week out from signing day. It's that Wednesday. He sends his area recruiter, Joe Salaveo, who has Utah. He goes in to have the in-home visit. And you're one coach down, so he activates a GA, Cody Woodio, on the road. And this guy's new and new to the business. So you got to do something creative to really make a forever lasting impression on the number two offensive line recruit in the country. So Salaveo goes in the in-home, mom, dad, brother is there, Panay is there. They're sitting at the dinner table, and he pulls up a huge computer, and they activate FaceTime on the computer, and they do a place for Mario, and his face comes up on it. And so he's sitting at the dinner table with them the whole time.
Wow.
Okay, so that's good. You may be cooked for four. You're playing for five. Half hour within dinner, you get a knock on the table or a knock on the door, and it's actually Cody Woodio there, but he's in the Oregon Duck mascot outfit. And he comes in and sits in the living room the whole time just nodding his head and smiling and saying, go Ducks. So your in-home visit all of a sudden has a whole new flavor because you have an Oregon Duck and you have Mario, who already used his one shot, sitting there. And so that family obviously took to that, and now he's probably their best player.
Wow, that's awesome. I've always said, and Urban used to pound it into everyone's head, is creativity and energy equals production. You know what I mean? And just being creative, doing something different like that. Like, who in the hell has an in-home visit with their mascot sitting there? Nobody. That's brilliant recruiting right there.
Always think outside the box, especially when you're in these places that you have to create the fun. Eugene, Oregon, or Clemson, South Carolina, or Tuscaloosa, there's not much going on there ever. So you have to, you know, create the fun and think outside the box.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. So now you're out of the college program world and back on the grind, seeing all these prospects and seeing these high schools, these coaches, specifically on the West Coast. Tell me this. What is the feeling out there right now when you go through these schools of these national, I'd say the nationally relevant programs right now, obviously the handful of West Coast schools and then the Alabamas and Ohio States and Clemsons of the world out West. What is the feeling out there?
I've never seen more blood in the water than you have it right now in Southern California. Probably 7 of the top 10 recruits in California are heading east. The top 2 QBs in the country, Bryce Young is going to Alabama. DJ Uiagalelei is heading to Clemson. Those kids in the past would go to USC or UCLA or Washington. That's not the case. Everybody and their mother are coming in their backyard and getting guys. Like Oregon last year signed 7 of the top 15 guys in Southern California.
Wow.
Well, they've never been able to like barely get a top 20 kid, let alone 7 in one cycle. So Washington, led by Jimmy Lake, was one of the best DB coaches in the country. He's coming down here and getting what he needs at his position right in their backyard. So where I think the program that really is in the mind of a lot of kids out West that normally wasn't the case is LSU. They have a commit from the top cornerback in the country, Elias Ricks. He's originally from Orange County. Ed Orgeron obviously recruited heavily in Southern California, in Phoenix, in NorCal when he was at USC. And he's coming here and he sees blood in the water and he is offering kids early. And right there, I mean, I was on his campus 3 weeks ago and met with that staff. And they offered 2 kids, a sophomore quarterback and a freshman receiver at Calabasas, his first offer, just basically on a recommendation that I made. And I mean, they're looking elsewhere. And that's a program that 90% of your roster, you can probably get in state, but they got a national brand, and most of all, and this is probably some common sense, but they're finally spreading out their offense, and you're seeing the results there, and your guy Joe Burrow is turning himself into a first-round pick because of that, and that's really made that program up to the next level as they're finally playing modern offense.
Yeah, that's a fact. It's also why they actually have a shot to beat Bama and go do something big. I mean, it's not just recruiting. Right. They actually have a chance to win something now. And you know, it's funny you bring that up because I just think about my time at Ohio State and kind of our staff's philosophy on recruiting out west, and it was like it was almost forbidden. Like Urban was not going out there. And then I recruited Bishop Gorman High School and recruited Haskell Garrett and Tyjon Lindsey and Tate Martell and that whole group, and he kind of conceded that he would kind of stretch that far. And slowly we pushed him to get to California. And then all of a sudden you look at Ohio State now. I mean, they have Jack Miller committed from Arizona. They had Wyatt Davis as a starting guard from SoCal. Chris Olave is probably their best receiver from San Diego. And I mean, the list just continues to go on. There's West Coast kids now on the roster, which that's never happened at Ohio State.
Right. And Wyatt Davis, that's a familiar name. How did the Buckeyes and former ace recruiter Zach Smith even find out about such a young stud named Wyatt Davis?
Well, I think you know the answer to that.
That's a kid that obviously Bama offered first when he was a sophomore and had four stars before he had any offers. And sometimes you just need to see a couple plays and at a practice and know this guy's got a lot of upside. So well, he's one that I know me and you are both proud of.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it's a funny story about Wyatt is he obviously loved the Buckeyes, and we had no contact with him. And you brought him up to me and told me about him and told Pantone about him. And that's how he got on our radar. And then Haskell Garrett, the D lineman from Gorman, told us, you guys have to go get this kid. He loves Ohio State. And that's how we initially got on him. Here he is, like the number one guard in the country. And we weren't even going to try because it's like a California kid. Why would we waste our time? And now he's like a 2-year starting right guard. So that brings up the huge question. And I know Buckeye fans will want to hear the answer to this question because there's a lot of speculation. Who is the coach at USC next year?
Yes, well, your crystal ball still has your old boss, Urban Meyer, taking that. And you know what's unique about that is for the first time in USC history that I know of, and a lot of boosters know of, is they're doing their football banquet less than 24 hours after the UCLA game this year. Mm. Last time I checked, they're still in contention to play 5 days after that on that Friday in the Pac-12 title game. Unless something goes sideways, they're still... You know, they beat Utah. They'd have to lose again not to play in that game. So that's a unique dynamic of maybe some people in that situation thinking ahead of time and saying, hey, we're going to have a new guy in place. We need to get him there because he's going to have 2.5 weeks to sign a whole class before that first period in December 19th. Also look at the top three guys that they're looking at for the AD position. Guy at Washington State obviously has ties to Ohio State. The guy at Boston College, extremely deep ties from Ohio State. And then Jeremy Foley, Urban's old boss at Florida. So I think you can connect a lot of the dots to this. And if he wants it, whether Clay's winning or not, he can probably trump that if you can get a legit dude in the Hall of Famer.
Yeah, that's a fact. I didn't even realize that was who they're looking. I mean, you're talking about the guy Pat Chung at Washington State was an assistant AD under Gene Smith, and then the guy at Boston College, Martin, his last name's slipping my mind, but he was an assistant AD under Gene Smith, and then Jeremy Foley obviously was the AD at Florida. So there's a lot of ties there. That's crazy. That's a fact. Well, I appreciate you coming on, Ryan. Always a pleasure and always great to get your insight, just like it has been for the last whatever it is, 10 years that I've known you.
I'm glad you're doing well, buddy. Maybe one day we'll meet again in one of our favorite places in Fort Lauderdale or somewhere around this country, maybe if you're out in SoCal. And I feel you can get me on, especially in the off season, and we can tell some in-depth stories on some of our favorite all-time recruits.
Oh, absolutely. Well, we definitely are going to schedule a couple more interviews because there's plenty of stories between you and I to go around. That's for sure.
Heck yeah, man. Well, good to hear from you. Stay blessed and enjoy your college football Saturday.
That's a fact. And that's something that is has not been the case until now. So looking forward to it. But thanks for coming on, Ryan. I appreciate it. All right. Well, I appreciate Ryan coming in or calling in, and we're going to bring him back on the show, especially as we get down kind of postseason when we start really getting into recruiting and talking about the cycle and what's going on. And he's got some hilarious stories. I got to get him to open up about some of them because he knows some stuff now.
Well, and once Urban takes that USC job.
Well, exactly. And how wild is that? The top three candidates for AD are all Urban people, basically.
Right. You think they might be putting eggs in a certain basket?
Well, I think they're going to shoot their shot, as they say. They're certainly sliding in his DMs right now. I don't know if they'll actually get it done, but they are shooting their shot. But all right, we forgot it last week. Got to get to it. Thank God we forgot it last week. If you didn't see the tweet and just listen to the show, you got saved because Peepaw's picks went on a streak there. They were hot, 14-4 in 2 weeks. I mean, just crushing it. And then last week, I think everyone in the world had a horrible week. I mean, with all those upsets and all those, I mean, the favorites that he picked lost straight up. It was a bad week. But Peepaw is back with his 9-game parlay, and you pick which ones you like the best. The first one is, let's talk about the noon games. He's got 3 noon games. UCF at Houston. He likes Houston plus 22. Plus 22. That's 22. A spread.
That's a lot of points.
Yeah, and then how about, I screwed it up again. Houston is going to UCF. That's at UCF.
Okay.
And then Nebraska goes to Purdue. He likes Nebraska minus 3 at Purdue. And then Boston College plus 3 at Syracuse.
Yeah, I like that one.
I like that one. Syracuse really sucks after being the only other ranked team in the ACC. They are terrible.
Boston College hasn't looked great either, though.
Well, they did not look great last week against Clemson. Exactly. That's a fact. So those are the 3 noon games. Got a couple 3:30 games. He likes Oklahoma State minus 3 at home against TCU. And then he also likes Marshall on the road at Rice minus 10.5. He always likes to pick those.
Yeah.
I'm sure he's, that's a great pick. I like
just
it.
Watching those Marshall and Rice games.
Hey, you know what? Doc Holliday, you're going to get it done. Yeah, I love the Thundering Herd.
I would put my money on it.
There you go. Then we got Utah minus 3.5 at Washington. Pitt minus 7.5 at Georgia Tech. And then he took at least another home team. UNC minus 2 against Virginia. Ooh. That's a huge matchup in the coastal there. Yeah. UNC minus 2 with Virginia coming to town in Chapel Hill. Then his last one, the 8 o'clock game, he's taking Oregon minus 4.5 at USC.
Yeah, I like it.
I like those picks. So bet wisely because he had a strong 2 weeks and last week was brutal. But let's hope for a bounce back this week. But definitely want to thank you for tuning in. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Ryan Bartow. We're going to bring him back, try to get some more juice out of him. And then also hope you enjoyed the rest of the show, the analysis of Florida, Georgia. And make sure you check out our tailgate. Like I've mentioned on last episode, mention it again. Our tailgate is going to be ridiculous. It's going to be big time. We're trying to do it the right way, trying to really set the bar high for every tailgate in the future. Great location, great food, great atmosphere, great drinks, great people. Check it out. Links are everywhere. It's on our website, menacesocietypodcast.com. Go to the shop. Buy a ticket. If you're a Patreon subscriber, you get a discount. Assuming that it goes well, which I'm sure it will, we're going to try to hold one maybe in Ann Arbor and then Indianapolis for the Big Ten Championship game. So we're going to try to really crank these up and get them going because we know how to have fun. But hope you enjoyed the show. Hope you enjoyed listening. Hope you learned something. Hope you were entertained. And if you weren't, as we say, go fuck yourself, San Diego.
That's why I don't read the newspaper, because it's garbage. And the editor that let it come out is garbage.
Or do you do what everybody else in media does, just create some shit and throw it on the wall and see what sticks, which is what I see happening everywhere.
Where are we at in society today? I'm a man. I'm 40.
When my time on Earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my ass.